Mr. Ver, Reel 7, we were talking about the P, and you've described it to me. Was it an effective weapon against tanks?
Well, at first, the bomb itself was okay if you hit the tank square on. But it had the fuse, what they call it, well, later, they got the, I think it was later, it was improved. The fuse was improved, and it had a graze, what they call a graze fuse, which meant to say you could hit the tank and glance and blow it, it'd still be effective, it'd still explode. Whereas before, if you held it and down, it would skim off. But we did a few firings. I've never actually fired one at in action at the tank, but we fired at the tank at a knocked out tank with practice and seen the results, which was. A hole, only small hole, but of course it went into the turret, and all those bits of steel were flying about inside the turret where they damaged. So they were pretty effective. In fact, one chap got a VC for standing and firing one from his hip, and he's in Lancashire Fusiliers in the 78th Division, and he got a VC for that, which I suppose he deserved. Because once you fired that, I mean, he wouldn't have a chance to reload it, so that was the output part about it. It wasn't an automatic weapon by any means.
2-inch mortar, what was it like as an infantry weapon?
Well, that was okay, although we used it mainly to lay in smoke. We did have high explosive, but we mainly used it for smoke, for laying smoke. You put the small attacking, you put a bit of a smoke screen down with it. Although you're only restricted with a number of bombs that you carried. You only had used to carry a pack of dinner black handle tubes, as far as I remember, with handle on the top. I can't remember. I think with the pH it was about 3, that's all. The 2-inch mortar was probably 6, I think. I maybe about 6 bombs. So when you fired those, that was it. And he got some more bombs from somewhere. But as far as I remember, you didn't carry very many bombs, not for the mortar.
Who was your first section corporal?
Well, they called him a chap called Keddie. Call him Keddie, Scots chap.
Had he been with the battalion some time?
I'm sorry, I'm wrong. The first section corporal, it wasn't Keddie. It was another chap, and I can't remember his name, but he was originally with the King's Shropshire Light Infantry. And he was later made sergeant, later our sergeant. He was the first. He'd been out a while with the battalion. Because he was more or less given the job of being a father to us from joining the battalion and taking us through things and took us on one or two walks on the previous battlefield and joined us around in general sort of thing.
What was the opinions of the Sedgenane battle, which hadn't gone very well for them?
Well, of course, I wasn't in it. I was only like a reinforcement to make up the numbers.
But were they talking to you about it?
But the ones I've talked to were pretty rough. We didn't talk a lot about it, but you didn't really. It's a funny thing that, yeah, I suppose, yeah, you went through a thing, but because you'd all gone been through it, you counted it as just an everyday occurrence. Obviously, it was a bad action. Yes, I lost quite a lot. But maybe I sort of went into it with me, like.
They weren't grumbling or blaming anyone for it.
No, not really. No. I never heard anyone about any officers or whatever. No.
How many sections at this time was there to a platoon?
Three. Yeah, 3 sections to a platoon, 4 platoons to a battalion. 4 companies to a battalion. No, 3 sections to a platoon, 3 platoons to a company.
Do you recall the names of any of the men who were in your section at this time, in these early days?
Yes, Mr. Steele, Titch Leach, Kenneth Leach. A lad called Richard. Bill Howells, a lad called Chowings, a lad from come out of the Goldwater, I think. I think you're that probably a young man, a few years older than me, actually. But I also remember, I can even remember his regimental number, which was 56-16-750, because this other lad's corporal was always going to, jokingly, always going to put him on a charge, you know. Put you on a charge, Charlie, and you say, all right, 56-16-750, that's my number. But, so that was a challenge, that was another
Were there good group of lads?
Oh, yeah.
No problems with any of them?
No, none of them. No.
Did you settle in pretty quickly to the with the Durhams and the Durham men?
Yes, oh yes, no problem with that. I would say we got the opportunity to go back to the KYL. I don't know of anyone that went. We settled in.
How many companies were there in the battalion?
How many companies? Four. Well, there were four rifle companies. There was a support company, a headquarter company.
Who was commanding the battalion then, when you joined them?
I think it was Colonel Preston.
And he just about took over. He hadn't been there long, had he?
I don't think so, no. I think he was the colonel when I joined. I think it was Colonel Preston.
Was he popular?
Yes, very popular, yeah. Yes, so especially when they say he'd walk about. You were our daddy, you know, and he'd walk about and with his jabber stick and, you know, everybody looked up to him there.
And any of the other officers in the battalion that you recall in these early days?
Are you talking about the days we were in Africa or?
Well, before before you left for Italy.
Well, there's a long time. Preston Tom Reynolds. He was well known. He was the PRI officer, the president of the Regimental Institute. He used to scrounge all the pig for the family, you know, something like that, you know. He was a big tall chap. I think it was some relation to to my mind, General Montgomery's son was looked after by his father, I think. I'm not sure. I can't recall the names of any other one.
But did you find there were good officers, easy to get on with you well and you got on with them well?
Yes, of course, especially after Junk Commander, yes. And the Company Commander, yes, it was all good officers.
Do you recall any of the big wigs visiting you in Algeria, in Tunisia, I should say? Did you see him when he came?
Yeah, we saw him, yes. King George, that wasn't there. No, I don't think he came to North Africa. That was it.
So you met them, you joined the battalion and went into company, of course. What happened to you then?
It's what happened there, Carl. I know it was... It isn't where we were, it's the... When we were there. We went by boat from Algiers to Bourne. That's not Bourne. I don't know what we did there, what we were doing there. We landed and it was at night and everybody was hungry, there was nothing to eat, and we were raiding a truck with some food in it, so that the officer fired his revolver up into the air to, quiet everybody. I just thought, what went there for? You know, I thought there was an air raid on at the time we landed. And then we came back. I'm sorry I'm being vague about this, but we came back then to it's called Bleeder, B-L-I-D-A, there on years. And we were training there up in the mountains. We used to go up. We started to go up, we used to go up every day, but then we found out it was a bit of a bite. So what we started to do was to go up, say, on Monday, and do 3 or 4 days, stay up there, and then come down, and then 2 or 3 days off. That was the leader. In that period, we got 1 or 2 days in Algiers.
What were the natives like? Were they friendly towards you?
Yeah, we didn't have a lot to do with them, really. At Bleeder, it was a really small place. It's a place that did a lot of civil war recently. Maybe fundamentally it's been slaughtered a lot of people around there. But it was just a small place. There was nothing much there. I can't remember having much to do with the local town.
Were you accommodated in tents?
Yes, we were in tents. Yeah. In those 10 men, not 10 men to a tent. With the mosquito poop houses out, half in the open, just to trash up the edges and be stuck with that.
Is it the same typical food as you got in the United Kingdom? Or did you have some African content coming
no,
in?
No. We'd more or less just started on with some pumpkin and that sort of thing, pumpkin pie, I remember having that. I can't remember having any native, because they didn't go into that stuff. They used to come onto the camp now and again with the barrels with fruit on them. I remember the sergeant made me go and kick in the barrel because it was, I mean, there's dysentery and that sort of thing, flying about, you know, so they wouldn't entertain anything from the natives, like. It was the flies and the latrines there, and just a row of boxes, lids on them, every, so far, every 3 or so, there'd be a fly trap, which was like a cord of gauze. So the flies would fly, the pieces, water bellamy or something like that. And the flies out of the little train and fly up into this trap, couldn't get out of there, used to be full of flies, and it wasn't very pleasant going to the little train at all. It was tickled to death. It was just a canvas screen round.
Was water a problem?
it used to come up on bows, I think. 1500 weights used to come up with it. Bound on the taps, 3 taps on the back. You just have to fight, well, you did have to fight your bottom, but you were that thirsty by the time it came up that you wanted to get to the front of the queue. And then it was warm, it wasn't cold, the ghost would be light with lime or something. You didn't quench your thirst unless you made it into tea. Yeah, but it wasn't cold at all, it wasn't very pleasant to drink. It's wet. There was that much dust there. You used to take it for a shower. Well, it was 3 miles away, taking the truck. And by the time you came back from your shower, the open truck had sucked all the dust in. You were worse off when you got back than before you went. But this way we were trained up in the mountains there. And went from there, I think, to Bizerta.
Training in the mountains, obviously mountain training. Were you using mules at this stage?
No. We just climbed up to the mountain, and we were doing various mock attacks and that sort of thing on the way up. We weren't allowed to drink any water. That was part of the punishment of the training, and which, because there was on that particular place where we were. You can fill your water bottles, but you haven't to drink any. You check when you got to make sure you haven't drunk any.
So how did the drinking of water from your water bottles go? Did you have to have a specific order to allow you to drink from the bottles?
No, but on that particular, if you're on an exercise, it might, they might say you carry a full water bottle, but you don't drink it. It was just a matter of making sure you got to where you were with a full water bottle, and you weren't overdoing it, I suppose. Partly discipline, you know. So, because we were walking up this mountain, and the Arabs had made a sort of a channel, right? At the top there was an ice cold lake, there was a pond at the top, and it was absolutely sparkling clear mountain water. And they channeled it down on some tubing made out of that bamboo. It wasn't bamboo, it was similar sort of thing, split. And it was running down, and you're walking past this cool water, and now you weren't about to have a drink. You don't care to have a drink, it was all part of the training.
How was your health going in those early days? Most people catch something when they go into Africa, evidently.
No, I didn't. I did get some desert sores, but most people got those. But they were just like the start of a blister, and it sort of still scars now, but it sort of started like a blister, and then it seemed to eat it like an ulcer later. And of course, the flies wouldn't leave it alone. You had to get it dressed and managed up, and used to dose it with that. The jetty and violet, so we used to push a bit. But that was really the only thing I got. I didn't get malaria or anything like that. But they used to dose it with methotrexate, and you couldn't get out of that. They used to, when you went for your dinner, out to the cookhouse in the mess tins, there'd be an officer there, and you'd open your mouth, and they'd throw your methotrexate in, and you know you'd spit it out because the damage was done, that it was that bitter that you didn't spit it out, you still tasted it. So you'd have one of those regularly. Yeah. If you did catch malaria, you'd be on the charge for it.
The sunburn, the hot sun, was that a problem?
Yes, I got once or twice I did get caught with it. Because I sunburn, I don't now, but I just keep my shirt on as much as possible. We did often go out without. I didn't go out in a shirt. I just keep it covered up, except for when we didn't manage to go into the sea, when we were at Cape Bon. And used to go in there. But it was early morning. We used to have it early morning swim for about 6 o'clock before it really got hot. So that's what we shirt on after that. And some lads went without shirts all the time, and that didn't bother them at all. They'd get brown, and that was it. But I don't think I get brown. I just burn, so I used to keep coming in.
Was there a siesta time for part of the day for you when you did nothing?
Well, what we used to do, we did have a siesta, but what we used to do, we used to start very early at morning, have a very early start. And I'd start about 6 o'clock or something like that, so that we get any training done in the cooler part of the day earlier on. And then we'd have it easier in the afternoon then. So that's how we got around the thing. Plus, if you're up in the mountains, it was cool up there anyway, so you didn't need climate for hot, really hot. That was the idea, that you could get all your training done in, say, 4 days while you're up there. And then you came down, and you go 3 days off then, as far as I can remember.
Did you see any Germans when you were in North Africa? Were you guarding prisoners?
Yes, we did guard prisoners at one stage. Prisoners in the cage. Mm. We were Germans and Italians, I think, in the cage. We saw them marching about, because they used to march themselves about after it finished. They'd march down to the beach or the swimming or to the baths, underground, and see us. There were no guards with them.
Were they, what kind of a mood were they in? If that's the right word.
There was one chap I talked to in particular, could speak good English. And his idea was that we were doing it all wrong, that we should be in with them against the Russians. And we'd suffer for it later on. We'd have to fight the Russians eventually, so, you know, that we should be with them fighting the Russians now. Because if you win the war, you have to fight the Russians later. It wasn't far wrong, like, we never came to it, but you never know, like, what could have happened, but it didn't come off, did it? But he was sort of well educated. So.
Were they pleased to be out of it?
I think they were, really. I think they were. Especially the Italians. And the Italians certainly were. And they didn't want to be in it, are they?
Did they show their contempt for the Italians?
Oh, they did, yeah. Yes. I know this particular camp, it was only just wire. We were, I don't know, I don't think we were really guarding it. We were just by this camp. I don't think we were guarding it, actually. I don't know. Anything. But we were sort of, we were camped next to it, didn't they? Used to have the rations up, say, tin of corned beef, say, tin of corned beef, and say, between two men. Well, if a German got it, he wouldn't share it with an Italian. Won't share his food with them. They sort of kept to themselves. And the Germans had sort of they were keen on keeping the place tidy, and the Italians couldn't care less. And they just laid down, and you know, as I think that's partly why they felt contempt. And they wasn't as efficient as they were, and they always looked down on them in battle, didn't they? In the desert.
Did you meet any Americans?
Not in North Africa.
Not there.
No.
So you would obviously at one point have to leave North Africa for the next stage of your experiences.
Yeah.
You said you went to Bizerta. Was that when you were going out?
We sailed from Bizerta. Yeah.
Do you recall what time of the year that might have been?
Oh yeah, it's September. We sailed in September.
Had
we
you been
in September the 9th?
Had you been told what was going to happen to you, wherever you're going?
Yes, we've been practicing beach landings with the Americans. Well, I didn't meet them actually, but
this was going on in North Africa.
In North Africa, we were acting as opposing the landing, and the Americans were doing the landings, and we were sort of opposing them, and then with various practices, getting on and off the boat, so we knew what was happening there. Of course, Sicily, after Sicily as well, we knew what the next part was going to be later.
You sailed from Bizerta?
Yeah.
What are your recollections of that voyage?
Well, recollections there was that Bizerta itself, it was, I think, it was on the hillside in tents, and there's a big harbour there, Bizerta Harbour, but all the craft was in there, and there the Italians were coming over. That's where General Horrocks got badly wounded, in Bizerta Harbour. He was our co-commander at that time, the ship back and finished it. There was air raids coming over every night, almost. Anyway, we sailed from there on a LCI that was crewed by American Coast Guards. They were the crew there. Just a small LCI. And it took us about 4 days, but we stopped off at Sicily. We stopped off overnight, just off Sicily. We were allowed into the sea for a swim. I actually didn't go in. I think others didn't, because they would be the shell of these big Portuguese man of war jellyfish. Everybody that got in was soon, they were soon out. And this crew threw a bucket in and got one out for us to show them out of the bucket of water. And then we went ashore and did see some Americans there, because they sort of gave us rations, K rations, which were pretty poor. Bars of chocolate bars and a packet of lemonade powder. Their rations, nothing like as good as our rations. But anyway, they supplied the rations that particular night, and the following morning we were back on board and on our way then, just to Salerno then.
And you knew now that you were going to Salerno by this point?
I'm not saying we knew. They called it Salerno. We knew we were going on a landing. I can't recall at the time if it was Salerno, but we knew we were going to a landing. So. But then the message came out over the Tannoy on the ship. A message from, I think it was Eisner, said that the Italians had surrendered. And we thought, oh, really? Landing at Naples and landing in the harbour and be all over, just about an occupied Italy, you see. We were wrong. Well, there was a sergeant, but there was Sergeant Treadgold, they called him, he got killed at Salerno, and he said, don't you believe it, you make sure your weapons are clean, which of course he was right.
Had you had talks from your CO or whoever about the landings itself and what your role would be?
We were sort of told of roughly where we're going to land, although we didn't. But we were told where we should land and what we should do. We should don't bother trying to fall up into companies or anything like that, but make your way straight inland until you hit the railway and turn north and follow the railway. And then there'd be military police directing you and to a concentration area where things would be sorted out. That was the idea.
Well, just before we come to that, what was the journey like in the landing craft? Was it comfortable?
It wasn't too bad, but it was all it was like tiers of bunks in those landing craft. I wouldn't call it very comfortable. It was a sort of flat bottom there, and all about it. It wasn't that comfortable, although the sea wasn't bad. It wasn't rough. So it wasn't too bad. Not to me, as I say, I do pretty well on boats. So it wasn't too bad. It was seemed to be a bit crowded, as I say, because there were these tiers of bunks that you were in. And if everybody got down out of the bunks at the same time, it was a bit crowded then.
And were you fed on the ship, or did you have rations with you which you consumed?
We're fed on the ship then. Yes, we're fed on the ship.
A lot of seasickness, you say it rolled a great deal.
Well, I didn't say it rolled a great deal, I said it rolled a bit, but the sea was crab. It would in a bad sea, it would have done.
So you weren't in too bad a condition when you got to the
Oh, no. I know, when we were doing some practicing in North Africa, and the Americans were having it was a bit rough, and most of them, couldn't hardly stand up, they were that seasick, but it was pretty flat when we got to it. I don't think anybody was seasick with that.
What was the scene as you approached your landing on the beach?
Well, you didn't see it because you were kept down below until you hit the beach. This particular type of landing craft, it just had a gangway. It was similar to the boats that you see in Spain now, where you go from one place up the coast and there's ramps that drop down, you have to walk down. But there's one on either side of the boat, one starboard. So until you hit the beach, and then they drop these ramps, and then they have you moving up from below either side of the deck and running off down the ramps on each side of the boat. And